Good afternoon. While this is loading, I'll just mention a little bit about Green Seal. Elise did a wonderful introduction about why we should be paying attention to environmentally preferable cleaners. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the standards that help identify what environmentally preferable cleaners might be. And I do work for Green Seal, so I'll let you all know that. And to help illustrate the point, to help you understand what standards are, I will be talking about Green Seal today. I won't be exclusively focusing on Green Seal, but just wanted to make that clear. I also wanted to note that Green Seal is an environmental nonprofit organization. We're a 501c3, and so we are working towards science-based programs that help in improve the sustainability in the marketplace. We also have educational and outreach programs out to purchasers as well as consumers. One of our main programs is the Standards and Certification Program, which I'll talk a little bit about today. And we also have, as I mentioned, an educational program where we reach out to institutions that are doing purchasing with environmentally preferable products, and we try to help them out with that. So I will focus on the standards portion of Green Seal's program today to help you understand a little bit more about what a standard is, how it plays a role in identifying environmentally preferable products, and really how we go about developing those standards. As I mentioned, we will take a little bit, a few examples from Green Seal's program, really just to help you understand how it all comes together. So I'll just begin with an overview of what a standard is. Very broadly and from the most general concept possible, a standard is simply a set of criteria. A set of criteria that you then can judge against in any kind of form or fashion. Sometimes people know it as a method, you know, you're a standard for a method or a standard of best practice. Well, in this case, we're talking about a standard that's identifying environmentally preferable cleaning products. So these standards can come in different sorts and types, and one of the main types of standards that we see out in the marketplace are what we call purchasing specifications. So institutions like states, federal purchasers, organizations, they buy cleaning products. How do they identify what cleaning products to buy? Well, they have to list some attributes that they're interested in seeing in those cleaning products, and we call those specifications. So that is a very widespread use of the idea of a standard. Another an area where we're seeing standards is in the government. The EPA has what we call guidance criteria that helps outline some things to really pay attention to when you're trying to identify environmentally preferable products. The EPA tends to focus on what we call like single attributes, which is really just focusing on the ingredients or the hazards of the materials going into the product. Whereas the consensus-based standard programs really look at a broader perspective, and I'll go into a lot of detail about that. So consensus-based standards, that's where Green Seal and Ecologo have programs on environmentally preferable products, and our programs are based on international guidelines, I'll call them, to not use standards repetitively, set by the International Organization of Standardization, otherwise known as ISO. The standards that outline this guidance are 14020 and 14024. So there's a list of rules or guidelines or criteria for organizations that are looking to develop consensus-based standards. And I've written some of the main characteristics. And these characteristics are also reiterated by a number of other organizations in the United States. EPA itself has reiterated these characteristics in their guidance for finding environmentally preferable products. And that is that the process of developing a standard, where you're trying to identify these criteria to judge against, is that it's done in an open way so that anybody who wants to participate is allowed to, so that you can hear all voices and perspectives while you're developing this set of criteria. In addition, you're thoughtful when you consider those comments that are coming in. That's called due process. Everyone's given a fair shot, and you are letting them know how you're proceeding with that, their comments. And it's also transparent. So anybody, maybe if they're not participating, can have access and watching the process. Even after the process is over, they can get a sense of what happened so that they can figure out whether or not they believe in what happened. Then, so that's the process. Then the other element of developing a standard is the actual criteria, the substance of the standard. The ISO guidance dictates that the criteria be science-based. That means that they're objective, they're reproducible, they're measurable, that sort of thing. There's peer review available so that there's something that really backs up the reason why you're using them. And they're life cycle-based. And this concept is a little unique because it's just emerging now that we're starting to look more towards environmentally preferable products. Life cycle-based means that we are interested in understanding everything that's going on from the raw material through the manufacturing, packaging, distribution, use of the product, as well as the end of the product's life. And all the hazards and issues from environmental and human health perspectives that arise through that entire supply chain. So the criteria for an environmentally preferable product should take into account that whole life cycle. In addition, these standards are set at leadership levels. So when you look at a product that meets these standards, it's not all products in the marketplace. It is only a much higher portion of the marketplace. Tends to be, we estimate, about 15% of the marketplace could meet the standard, and everybody else is still striving towards meeting the requirements in the standard. So I'll talk a bit about the process before I go into the criteria in more detail. So generally, the process follows the main steps, and these steps are outlined in the ISO guidance that I've mentioned. And it begins with a feasibility assessment. This is usually an internal process where the organization really understands whether or not there's a need for a standard. Are purchasers, consumers, they interested in environmentally preferable versions of these products? Is it possible to identify environmentally preferable versions? What are the issues at hand? Is it even possible to make something that is environmentally preferable in that area? So we ask these questions early on to understand, is there something to do in this area? Once we figure that out, then we move forward with our public version of the process. We begin with what we call a scoping development. And this is where we really just announce that we're interested in developing a standard in this category. And it's really an open-ended question where we want to understand what people are interested in with these products. Are they wanting to have criteria about, a specific toxicity endpoint? Or are they looking more towards use-related issues? Or do they know an awful lot about certain products that are really challenging? That sort of information we just gather in the early phases. This is also the phase where we really identify the category that we're developing the standard on. This becomes something that's very important later on, where a standard needs to have, it needs to cover products that are similar in their life cycle perspective, that the criteria all relate to each other, but useful enough that the market finds the standard applicable to their needs. So this ends up being kind of a balancing act, and we try to address that very early on in the question with the public input. Then we move into a period where we start drafting a standard. And I'm using GreenSeal's language. Ecologo does the same process. They just call the documents a little differently. But we call it a proposed standard. It's really just like the first draft where we have done this life cycle research, and I'll go into the research in just a few moments. And we're putting out a document where we are proposing a starting point for the standard, the set of criteria and the things to consider. Then we invite the public at large to provide their input. This means that anybody who's interested can provide their expertise and their input and their feedback as we develop that standard. Then we review all that information, and sometimes it's a lot. In the standard that I'll talk about a little bit more in detail in a few moments, we had 400 stakeholders involved in the process, and so naturally that was a lot of comments to deal with. But what that means, though, is that we got a very diverse range of comments to consider to really help build the standard to make sure it's achieving its goal. So once we've gotten all that information, then we move forward with like the next version of the standard. And again, this is GreenSeal's language. We call it a draft final. And this is where we now are working with the people who've been involved in the process. So we call them stakeholders or registered stakeholders. This isn't an open-ended call to the public at large because there's been some progress along the way. And we want to make sure we continue to move forward so that the standard can be available to the public eventually rather than keep backtracking and starting over and over and over again. This ends up being an iterative process because we constantly are getting feedback from stakeholders as we move along. So this does take a little bit of time, but ultimately the standard gets approved and then it's issued. And the way Ecologo and Green Steel's program run is that we then use the standards and they are available for certification so that you can see a product with an Ecologo or a Green Steel on it. And the products in the bathrooms here at the conference center are Green Steel certified. You may have noticed that the hand soaps, if you look at these kinds of things, maybe you will now, that the soap dispensers have a Green Steel logo on them, and the carts that the restroom cleaning staff has also have the Green Steel mark on them. So you can start paying attention to that sort of thing when you go to commercial buildings. I won't talk much about the certification process now because I really want to focus more on the kind of the science behind all the criteria development, but if you have questions about certification, I can certainly address that later. So as I mentioned, I want to talk a bit more about, you know, to help you understand the information that goes into developing the criteria, because this is where a lot of you play a role, and so I want to highlight a lot of that information to help you understand where it all goes. So there's really four main areas that we look at when we're developing a standard. It begins by understanding the regulation. And because these standards are identifying the leadership products, we have to go above and beyond the regulations. And so that means understanding what's going on in the United States where the standards are applicable, but also looking globally and seeing what's emerging elsewhere. Oftentimes we're looking to the European Union and understanding the regulations that are going on there. And when you talk about cleaning products, there's an awful lot of development in that area as well as personal care products. So there's a lot of things for us to pay attention to when it comes to global regulation development. And as I mentioned, there are global standards that dictate the development of these standards or eco-labeling programs. And so there's these types of programs actually all over the world. And we are networked together in what we call the Global Eco-Labeling Network. It's an organization where all of organizations like Green Steel, Ecologo, and the many others across the world get together. And we try to harmonize programs that are covering similar topics. So we do that as well. But today I'm going to focus a little bit more on the last two things, where we do an environmental impact health assessment and we also do life cycle assessment. So I'll begin by talking just a little bit more about the environmental and health impact assessment. This is where we look at that whole life cycle. We understand where we're looking at the raw materials, the manufacturing, the packaging, the distribution, as well as the use and end of life considerations. And we want to understand what the health and environmental issues are related to that whole supply chain. So it's basically a literature review. We're trying to see what's going on, what's emerging, what's evolving. And when we did this review for cleaning products, we found these various themes coming up. The general health hazards were always there, so that wasn't kind of new information. We just wanted to update the status. And then we were looking more carefully at skin exposure issues as well as inhalation exposure issues and then the whole range of things. The way Green Steel does this is that we put out a report, we call a background document, or it's like a rationale document, just really summarizing this environmental and health impact assessment so that everybody has access to what we've had access to so that they can understand ultimately where the standard comes from. So Elise really set a nice groundwork on the issue related to inhalation concerns and cleaning products, and clearly asthma was an area that we needed to pay attention to when we were looking at our standards for cleaning products. This is just a very recent publication that summarizes, you know, a whole lot of issues very concisely, just suggests, you know, pointing out clearly there's a link between the use of cleaning products and worker-related asthma, and so there's some various components in the products that we should be paying attention to when we're developing our standard. So we looked at all that research, and we had a lot of input through our experts and stakeholders and other individuals. And what we put together were a number of criteria that address those issues. And this is just a selection to help illustrate how you get from the literature about asthma down to specific criteria. So we actually have a requirement that prohibits the use of ingredients that are identified as asthmogens by the AOEC. We also have a volatile organic content limit that keeps the VOC level at 1% or lower, or 0.1% for dilutable cleaners. And we also have a chronic inhalation toxicity requirement. And if you have questions, I can go into detail on that during the Q&A. But I just want to kind of give enough time to the rest of the speakers, so I'm going to move on. I would be remiss if I didn't say that there were a whole lot of other health and environmental requirements that we found as a result of our environmental and health impact assessment. And these are just a few. I do want to touch on life cycle assessment because this is another component of the research that we use when we develop our standards. Life cycle assessment is a standardized methodology, another set of ISO standards that we use. These are 14040 and 14044. This is just a methodology standard that tells you how to do research on environmental impact related issues. It really just says that you need to gather information about the inputs and the outputs and model them in a way so that you can then quantify the environmental impacts associated with them. These are the impacts that we studied for our cleaning product study. There were resource-related issues, ecology-related issues, as well as human health. LCA, I'll just let you know, is not a great predictor for human health. As you can see, there's just two endpoints there that are indicated, and they're not very strong. That's where we rely a little bit more on that impact assessment that we did previous to the LCA, or that I mentioned previous to this. So when we did a life cycle assessment for cleaning products, the themes were that the priorities we should pay attention to is that the formula should have reduced toxicity, that looking at concentration of a product is very important, as well as reducing the use of packaging material. So then we took that to the standard, and that is reflected in the standard with various criteria. As I'd mentioned, there's a ton of requirements for health and environmental issues. And then we have minimum concentration requirements. So all the products in our cleaning product standards have to meet minimum levels. It's 1 to 16 dilution that's required for most products, 1 to 32 for more general purpose products. And we also have a number of requirements that ensure that packaging material is used as minimally as possible. So when you do a life cycle assessment later, what you find is that when you follow the criteria in the standard, and like I said, you can only model a portion of the criteria in the standard because health impacts are very challenging to do in an LCA, what we found is that a product that meets the Green Seal standard has an 88% reduced environmental impact in total. And a lot of that, as I said, it's focused on the formula itself having less toxicity as well as concentration and reduced packaging materials. This is just a slide to show you that Green Seal's got a number of standards that have taken this kind of comprehensive research approach, and we're doing constant development of new standards. One of the ones that is particularly of interest to you know, based on Elise's discussion beforehand, that we are developing a standard right now for what we call specialty cleaning products, which includes dish products, graffiti removers, disinfectants, and all those kind of harsher types of chemical cleaning products. And that's actually open for public review today. And we'll have a webinar on it next week. And the close of that comment period is, I think, December 1st. So you can look at Green Seal's website for more information on that. So I will just go ahead and close for now and welcome questions at the end of the session. Thank you very much. Thank you.